presentations, water cooler chats, groupthink meetings to kick up thought showers. Office life can be dull. Learn what's happening in nature and on the farm every week with Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. We were just talking to Geoffrey Robertson there about his idea that the British should return the Elgin marbles as part of the Brexit negotiations. And, you know, that kind of opened a box of claims, if you like. Now, can you ask that man about getting the Irish crown jewels back? The British stole them 110 years ago. How about all the Irish oak that built the Houses of Parliament? Says another Seamus. So, yeah. If they ended up having to dismantle the Houses of Parliament, then maybe they mightn't be so particularly clever about that. And a lot of people making comments along the lines of, it sounds like that man's mouth was full of marbles, because he's kind of posh and a barrister. Michael on Twitter, by the way, though, says Nigel Farage equals champion of working people. Fought against illegal Irish bank debt more than any Irish politician. So if you're an Irish politician, you're paled into second place by Nigel Farage. I can feel your shame. There's a website called hempture.ie, hemptur.ie, which you can buy CBD oil if you want to buy that online. Anyway, Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal joins us once again. Good afternoon, Mairead.
Good afternoon.
So we're going to start with a bit of a detective story. DNA tracing Russell Cattle.
Yes, Russell Cattle. They're always a bit of an issue in the country. There's not that many cases every year, but there's always a couple of cases. And it's very difficult to catch the culprits. And down in Clare, well, in court this week, there was a case of an elderly man who'd had cattle stolen three times on him since 2013. And there was no trace, and that was it. You know, he'd had to put up with the loss. But on the last lot of cattle that were stolen, it was a very cold January night. And when the Gardaí were called, they were able to trace the hoof prints of the animals up along the ditches and up a road 2 kilometres away to another farmer's place. And when they searched that, here didn't they find the animals there. So with the use of DNA, you know, that was okay. I mean, how did they get there? Sure, the man could have picked them up on the avenue or on the laneway, or they could have broke into one field and, you know, went riot. But so how did they trace where the cattle had come from? They did it through the use of DNA. And they were able to, you know, by, you know, bloods, discover that not alone were there animals there from the third, on this particular farm, from the third sea or rustling incident, but also from the second one. And they were able to trace where the rest of them had gone to. Now, the judge described it as the best piece of Garda investigation he had seen in a long time. And he also complimented the Department of Agriculture, because the one reason why, you know, I would be bringing this to listeners' attention is that the traceability element really stood up. You know, you're far more traceable, I reckon, in this country nowadays if you're an animal than if you're a human. But the traceability really stood up, and it was because of the department's very strict controls that they were able to identify the animals. And you see, by doing the DNA, they were able to know who the animals were related to, and they were related to the animals that were in the elderly man's herd that had been rustled, not the gentleman that had them on his farm. So that's how the use of DNA is really helping to deal with that now.
Right.
So
okay.
It can go back. So it can tell you who all your relations are, and then you can link the animals to that family, as opposed to where they're sitting, where they're not belonging to.
Does that essentially make cattle rustling
You have to be able to find the cattle.
Yeah, that's true.
Initially. So in a lot of cases, you don't get the chance of ever getting near the cattle because they're gone or they're disappeared or they're slaughtered. But in this case, they were hidden in a concealed part of the farm, and they were able to be discovered. And it was the DNA then that linked them back to, like, if they had tags taken off them, or their ears kind of, you know, where their tags go in, cut, that part of the ear cut off. I mean, anyone could say anything. That, you know, they found them on the road and they brought them in for a bit of shelter. But the fact that they had the DNA sample was able to make the direct link to the farm where they'd come from.
Mm-hmm. And crime on farms is going down, though, or has
gone
down?
Yeah, there is now. And again, you know, there was a big rural emphasis on crime, and the fact that people were being terrorised, especially to live not too far from motorway junctions. And there was a problem with, you know, farms being theft happening on farms, literally by order, you know, trailers taken, hedge trimmers taken, you know, tractors, anything taken that stood up. But there was I attended a couple of meetings down in Thurles, and you know, people were really, really angry about the situation, and they felt abandoned. And Operation Torque then came into effect, and it certainly would seem to have had an impact. Now, of course, you know, with all the controversy over the last few weeks with figures from the Gardaí, these figures would have been supplied to the Central Statistics Office by the Gardaí. So, you know, we have to trust them, I suppose. But figures are down. Theft on farmland is down 14%. In outhouses and sheds, it's down 32%. Mm. And in yards, it's down 35%. So they're year-on-year figures for 2015 versus 2016.
Explanation for that?
Well, again, I think probably, you know, the furore that was mounted in the winter of 2015 in particular, and the ongoing campaign after that to get more visibility of Gardaí in rural areas, that's beginning to work, and certainly seems to have worked in the course of 2016. Or because it also shows that the year that there was the the big outbursts about it, you know, they were very high figures. I mean, in yards, there was 2,742 thefts recorded. Now, they may not necessarily all have been in farmyards, but that's the number of yard thefts. In outhouses and sheds, 1,235. So you're talking about, you know, they're big numbers. So to have something like a 32 and 35% decrease in those numbers is certainly very welcome.
Yeah, that's it's very welcome, quite dramatic as well. Yep. So why do the Turks, why are they attracted to our bulls?
Well, you know how many cows have calved, or how many calves have been born, or registered rather, since the start of the year?
No idea.
1,045,000.
Crikey.
So if you see bleary-eyed farmers talking to you or coming towards you, you'll understand why. Mm. The maternity wards have been absolutely jam-packed for the last couple of months. And once cows calve, you know, they're given an interval where they can rest up. Now, milking cows keep milk, you know, they're there for their milk. But the suckler cows, they would be, you know, the calves would be suckling on them. So they're given a couple of months before you start putting them in calf again. And so now all thoughts are turning to that, and people, their eyes are on, you know, the bulls they're going to breed from, what they're going to like. But the AI stations here in the country, now that's artificial insemination stations where the technician goes out and you select the kind of the sire you want, and they have a straw of semen from that sire, and the cows are artificially inseminated. But there's a big demand for Irish bull semen from all over the world. Turkey is a particular favourite. They've opened up to our weanling cattle, but they also like the semen that we have. But they really, really like the Irish Simmental. According to Conor Ryan of Duvet AI Station, he says they particularly like the fact that they have the nice white heads, red body and curly hair.
And they look Irish.
Yeah, they even look Irish, yeah. So anyway, they don't have the same kind of look as the German and Austrian Simmentals, where they would usually have purchased their breeding stock from. But they have a big herd. They have 16 million cattle or cows in the national herd, and they import about 6.5 million semen straws every year. Mm. So they're a big market to be able to get at. But also, you know, when we talked about the DNA on the livestock on those Russell cattle or Russell cows, they're looking for, you know, generations, basically four or five generations back for the bull sire. They want information that far back. Now, how many of us in this country could go back four or five generations right across our ancestry? Mm. So that's, again, that level of traceability and everything that's there. Where else are we looking for it? In Mexico, they like the high-end beef straws over there. In Argentina, again, it's beef and dairy straws they're looking for. Chile is also importing. They like dairy. There's a 1,000 herd beef or a dairy herd out there, and all the cows are bred from Irish bulls, from Dovey. Mm. In Vietnam, they're looking for the Charlies and the Limousines. And in Serbia, it's Herefords they want. In Georgia, of all places, it's the Jersey breed they want to help build up the proteins in the dairy herd. Pedigree Angus, if you have a pedigree Angus, you're away with it, because right across Europe, they're looking for pedigree Angus animals. Also in Romania and Bulgaria and Serbia. So, you know, it's a potential, or it's a growing market. The bull stations are reporting that, you know, numbers are up dramatically. And I think, you know, back to the whole issue of being able to have traceability and that accountability, you know, that that's all in the herd now. And, you know, you're only ever, as, you know, we saw with the recent controversy in Brazil, the industry is only ever as strong as the weakest link in it.
Yeah.
And certainly if it can be from the breeding perspective, if everything can be shown to stand up to scrutiny, you know, and other countries recognise it as such, that's a great step forward. And, you know, that was shown in that particular case, you know, where the DNA was able to be traced back to a particular farm.
Mm.
So, you know, when you've got that, there is a real sense of security around the meat that we're selling.
Maria in Dublin has a question for you. Does Maria know if battery farmed heifers like those in the dairy farm in Dorset exist in Ireland? Photos are in The Guardian a few days ago.
We have much smaller scale farms than in the UK.
Mm.
I mean, the average, I don't know, the average suckler herd in this country is only about 13 or 14 cows. The average dairy herd is probably about 40, 45. Maybe gone up a bit now because of the new entrants coming in. The vast majority of farms that I know, like I've been on a dairy farm there only last weekend, where, you know, they're milking about 170 cows. But all the calves are in units, little pens of 10. And when I talk little now, they're the size of 3 times the size of the ground floor space of most modern houses.
Yeah.
And beautiful straw bedded, little feeder for to get concentrate from. You know, the milk feeder is put into them twice a day. And I mean, they are absolutely shining. And then they have a way out from the shed straight out onto grass. But you wouldn't put them out yet because it's just the weather is too cold.
Yes. Yeah.
So
That's not the same as
it's not
what we
same.
Understand
fashion.
Now,
one of the things, one of the real problems with, you know, these big kind of, and they learned it in the poultry industry, and they've learned it. And I mean, okay, there was agitation as well, and fair dues to that has to happen too. But if you put a huge number of animals together in close confines like that, particularly if they're young calves, the risk of infection and mortality rates is absolutely huge.
Mm.
You know, farmers on the whole, the vast majority of them want to produce live, healthy stock. And you won't do it in cramped conditions and you won't do it in bad conditions. You'll just end up with bad stock and a lot of more infection and a lot of mortality. So, I mean, there's loads of farmers in this country, thousands and thousands of them, who would pride themselves on maybe 1% or 2% losses in the course of a calving season.
Mm.
That every calf that arrives alive, you know, is there 12 months later, unless of an accident or something like that, or an unknown cause, but not out of neglect or mismanagement.
Yeah. Now, there's a big decline in the number of beef calves being registered. Why
is
that?
That's interesting. Well, from now, again, I hope your listeners find it interesting, but from, you know, if you think down 3 years from now and the steak that's going to be on your plate, is that going to make it more expensive when you have a 10% fall in the number of you know, beef animals being born. These are the figures from ICBF, which is the breeding group. And that 10%, when you actually bring it in numbers, you're talking about 21,000 fewer beef animals after being born this year versus the same period last year.
Mm.
And in 1 week alone, on the 24th of March, the figures were down by 7,000. Now, there's an awful lot of cattle in 7,000 cattle.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, if you put them together, like, it is a really big amount of them.
Mm.
And that's only in 1 week. So, I mean, you know, why is it happening? Some people are putting it down to the weather when the cows would have been going in calf back in the, you know, the early autumn or late summer. The weather was very poor and, you know, they were maybe in the humour. You know, loads of things. Yeah, but loads of things impact on. It's very, I mean, reproduction is the same. We might like to think we're all different, but not necessarily. And that could be one part of it. But also that farmers, because the returns from beef are so limited, that keeping a cow all winter and producing one calf and having to keep two animals and getting the income from just one of them, that it's no longer worth their while doing it.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're dry stock, they're buying in the calves or buying the weanlings and rearing them rather than having to keep the cow to produce the calf. So they reckon, now we haven't got statistics on that yet, but they reckon that that's what's happening. Of about 1,045,000 calves registered so far, and of those, 80% of them are coming from the dairy herd. So, you know, they're they're coming off dairy cows. So that really shows the importance of the growing importance of the dairy sector. There's been a slight increase there now, not dramatic, which shows that, you know, maybe the level of milk production isn't going to go through the sky again this year. But the increase there has only been about just 2.5%, a little bit less than that.
Just going back to the DNA thing, the Curious Orange has texted in, and it's basically a TV format. Tracing their family via DNA. It's a TV show. Moo, do you think you are? Ray Lavery, thanks a million.
Tune in every Wednesday from 2:45 to learn more about farming life on Moncrief.
For coming into us.